Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Professors In podcast. Just a quick notice, we are now hosting our podcast on our own website, and we have a new, you don't need to know the logistics. Just know this, you can go to theprofessorisin.com, and on the front page, you will see the most current podcast. You can go to theprofessorisin.com/podcast and see all of the episodes, and you can join us over at Mighty Network and watch us record the podcast and talk to us, well, after we do it, and be part of that experience. So we are really trying to make the podcast more interactive, more feedback from you, so jump on in. Oh, and I'm Kel Weinhold, and I'm the productivity coach.
Excellent.
That was a great introduction.
we're professionals here.
Yes.
And I am Dr. Karen Kelski, the founder of The Professor Is In. And as always, we are delighted to have you here with us today. And thank you for following us in our transition onto the new sort of system, which, you know, has had a few bumps and a few delays, but we're back.
We're there. We got it. Mm-hmm. We have a new editor who's awesome. And
yeah.
Here we go.
Stephanie Blair Watts is our editor, and she's doing an amazing job. And if you need any podcast editing help or other types of graphic design and music production, you should definitely get in touch with her. So, and if you don't know how, get in touch with us, and we can make that happen.
So yesterday, we recorded an episode about grief and about processing grief in the academy. And in that episode, we kind of both ran smack dab into our grief.
Yeah.
And it became maybe a little disjointed, definitely a little disjointed, but we're still not clear whether it was, anyway, we're still not clear how valuable it would be to a larger group. For us, we got to process some stuff, but it was a pretty rocky, painful road. So
yeah, plus we had to stop in the middle because I was crying.
Well, that's sort of what I meant by rocky.
Yeah, well, I think here we should just be blunt.
I mean, let's just be DeGrasse. It's the brand, right?
Right. It's the brand.
It was really hard. So what we're going to do today is we're going to get back to what we were trying to say yesterday before we walked into our feelings and sunk up to our necks.
So, and actually, we have a different, possible slight difference of opinion, which is that you think we should perhaps not share it. Now, you listened to it afterwards, and I have not. Right. So with that caveat, I may come to agree with you after I listen to it. But I am wondering if you know, the disjointed and highly emotional thing is, like, really good podcast material right now, whether, you know.
I agree with you, and I think we may run them as a dual drop, like next, you know, Tuesday after next. Maybe you'll get two. Maybe you'll get, this is what happens when you run smack dab into your grief, and then you'll get some more, like, specific tools of how to process. And I don't mean, like, therapy tools. I just mean some things that we've thought about how to come to terms with what you are losing and what you're not that you might think you're losing.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the last episode, not the interim episode, but
Not the crying episode,
but the episode where we were talking about sort of deciding to stop digging.
Mm-hmm.
We ended that with me saying that for my Art of Leaving project that I'm working on, I had people write a breakup letter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where that podcast started, where that podcast ended and where we wanted to start in terms of that.
Okay.
So, breakup letter. If you were going to write a breakup letter, what would you put in it?
To the academy.
Yeah. I'm asking you.
Oh.
This is how we went down a road yesterday. I started asking you questions and it got really terrible. So maybe. Okay. What I suggest.
Well,
in this,
first of all, I'm not sure what you mean, because I don't do Unstuck, and that's your project. So
no,
I'm curious
not talking
to
about,
know
it's not
what,
an Unstuck thing. It's just like, if you were breaking up with somebody and you were going to tell them about the process, I mean, why? You would write a, like, I'm breaking up with you. It's like a Taylor Swift song, right?
Right.
So here, what's your Taylor Swift song? Or pick a different person if you want to. But who's that? I feel like there was a song like, I'm breaking up with you.
Mm-hmm.
But let's, or 10 Things I Hate About You. Let's do that. I think that it's really, really valuable to write out why it's not workable for you anymore. Why does this relationship not work? going back to the idea that we are talking about leaving or leaving your toxic relationship. You can stay.
Right. So in other words, this is a conversation, not just to remind our listeners, this is not just about people who are definitely leaving or considering leaving, but it includes people who are going to stay, but would like to break up with your toxic relationship with the academy. Because you can stay in the academy and not be enmeshed in cycles of abuse and exploitation.
Codependent relationship of the university. So, mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. That I want to ask people to do as if you're thinking about leaving, if you're already, I am out of here. If you're, look, I've been doing this for 15 years and I know how bad it is and I'm finished with it. What would the letter look like? Like if I were to go back and think about when I left, because I left before we left Illinois, I resigned from my department.
Right.
I resigned from my department.
But you didn't resign from the academy, though, because you were planning to continue on. And
but I resigned from a tenure-track job.
Oh, right, when we left Illinois, right. Yes,
right.
Indeed.
I resigned from a tenure-track job.
Yes, you did resign from a tenure-track job.
I wrote a letter that said, this is the biggest load of bullshit, racist crap I've ever had the misfortune to be involved in. And it was based on a whole bunch of stuff that I'm not going to go into.
Right, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I didn't forget you resigned from a tenure-track job. I forgot that you wrote that letter.
Oh, yeah. And the dean was so upset with me because I wrote it CC'd to the provost. I didn't just write it to the dean.
I wrote it to
the department head.
Oh, my God.
The dean and the provost of these are the things. And I was in a department that was already in receivership.
Yeah.
So it was a breakup letter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, but if I were to go back and write it as a breakup letter, like this thing is
I'm leaving you because.
Right.
Because this environment is toxic. Were you gonna talk about some of the specifics?
No.
I don't mean about Illinois, but I just mean like what?
Like the workload is unhealthy for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have been prioritizing this work over my family or my emotional well-being. I can make more money working at Walmart.
Right.
The freedom.
No matter how much I do, it's never enough.
Right. I am the department chair and the college dean and everything from everything on down are undermining and dismissive. I think that in a breakup letter, you can write all those you statements of you suck this way, you suck that way. It may not be the letter you deliver, but go ahead and start with you suck.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that there's a real value in writing I felt, right? Instead of you suck. I really am always advocating we go to blame when we don't want to feel what we feel, right? I feel really sad. You suck. Hmm. Instead of I feel really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we're so quick to jump on the blame train to get out of our feelings.
Right.
So what if you made it all I statements?
Yeah, I would enjoy that a lot less. That would not be on brand.
I'm aware of that. I'm asking what would happen if we went back and wrote the breakup letter to Illinois, the university, when we both walked away.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, Illinois, yeah.
And we wrote those letters in our minds. We didn't do this publicly. Well, you did, Death of a Soul on Campus.
Racist AF.
Right, but you wrote Death of a Soul on Campus, and it was like,
yeah, I did.
You whole place, you suck.
Yeah, that was.
And if you switch that around to, I felt so alienated.
I felt so alienated.
I was so lonely.
I was so lonely.
I was so not in sync with what
right, I was
is
so misunderstood.
Here. Yeah.
Kept trying to talk in ways that nobody quite grasped.
Right. I didn't fit. Like, what if you actually said, instead of you made it so I didn't fit, just like, I didn't fit. I kept trying to make myself fit. Mm-hmm. I don't fit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing, folks. You can stay in the academy and accept that you don't fit if you stop fighting that you don't fit. Like, that's a little convoluted, but like, I don't need to be in a battle trying to prove that I fit. I'm just going to say, nope, I don't. In fact, I don't want to be like you all, but I'm going to stay here and do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the cult-like thing of the academy is you have to behave like us instead of, no, I don't. I'm going to do my job. Right. You know, it's like the people who work 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And they get all sorts of flack.
Right. I mean, there are risks for people. We should be really clear that if you don't yet have a tenure track job, or you do, but you're not yet tenured, there are different risks marching to your own drummer, you know? And so people have to make, you know, be aware of those and make choices and, you know, determine what they're willing to do. And a lot of people, the thing about the academy is that a lot of people make choices which they insist are temporary. They'll be like, well, I'm just going to toe the line in grad school. And then they get a tenure track job. And they're like, I'm just going to toe the line until I get tenure. But the thing is the grad school, like in a field like history, is like 8 years. Tenure track is 6 years. And so now you've toed the line for 14 years. You've literally forgotten what the line is. It has become you and you've become it.
Right. Your behavior is, you know, the way you live your days is the way you live your life.
Mm-hmm. So there isn't really, you know, so the risk of saying like, oh, I'm going to be an outspoken person once I get tenure is, you know, generally not as realistic as people think.
Right. If you think about, 20 years of training mm-hmm. or 15 years of training, it's pretty hard to just turn on a dime and say, ha ha, now I'm ready to speak truth to power.
Right.
But I also.
Well, I was just thinking yesterday, this is just an aside, but I was. You know how when you go to someone's account on Twitter and then right below it, it has 3 suggested accounts, which are somehow related to the account you're looking at.
Or at least Twitter thinks that.
Yeah, at least Twitter thinks that. Anyway, so I went on to this account that I was considering following, and I think I did. I can't remember who it was. And I scrolled down and I saw the 3 suggested accounts, and they were all anonymous academics. They were like disgruntled science professor and, you know, struggling grad student. Or, well, they weren't struggling grad students. They were all people who had jobs.
Right.
And one was an administrator.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I hated that from day one and I still hate it today. I'm like, you know,
sign
tweet under your own name or it doesn't count.
Right.
And I mean, and I know, like, believe me, I know all the objections. I know all the objections. But nothing's going to change if everybody just keeps complaining anonymously, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't like it back in the day. I mean, people were doing it when they were blogging. There wasn't so much social media, but or writing columns. Yeah, I was like, yeah. And I very, you know, self-righteously was like, not following you 3. I will follow the first person, though, because they had a name. Okay.
We perhaps might have digressed.
To blame.
To blame. We should change the name of the podcast. When digressing to blame, who's going to take bets on when it occurs?
Right.
So I think there are ways that you can, within the academy, get to set your limits. And I guess what the problem I have, Karen, is that so often I see people say, well, I can't do that because of tenure. I mm-hmm. can't do that because of my advisor. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem I have with that is how many stories are created, mm-hmm. not real, like mm-hmm. the fear that someone is going to object.
I know.
And believe me, folks, I'm saying this all within the context of understanding the racist, sexist, homophobic BS that is the academy. Mm-hmm. And that if you are a white woman and you stand your ground and say, I work from 9 to 5 and you're equally productive and you do all those things, the chances, you're going to be seen as a bitch and not collegial. Mm-hmm. If you're a black woman who does that, you may be at risk for tenure. So mm-hmm. I'm not trying to do pie in the sky here.
Right.
I am saying that I think we go to an extreme to try to get away from that.
Well, yeah. Well, I saw it with grad students all the time when I was a faculty member, is that they would say, oh, so-and-so hates me, and I can't possibly do that because they're going to retaliate against me. And I'm not saying that retaliation doesn't exist, because it totally does. But in those cases that I'm thinking of right now, I knew for a fact that that wasn't going to happen. And because I just knew the personalities involved, and I knew the way the faculty member talked about the grad students, that grad student in particular, behind their backs, not behind their backs in a bad way, but like in faculty meetings. And it was totally supportive. Like I knew that there was this massive mismatch
mm-hmm.
between the fear that the grad student had and what this faculty member was actually likely to do. But there was no way to say, I tried to say it, but you know, in an atmosphere of fear and abuse and hierarchy, nobody's going to believe you.
Right, and there's also negativity bias. Everybody can come up with the story of the professor who was or the faculty member who was punitive. We also have to remember that the vast majority aren't.
Yeah.
So the point being, way back when, is where can you start to delineate, this doesn't work for me and I'm going to do this differently, rather than this doesn't work for me and I'm going to leave. And that was really the point, is that you can start to say, I'm going to change the way I do this, because guess what? I'm breaking up with overwork.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? I'm breaking up with fixing your problems.
So maybe
department.
The first thing to do before, well, in the breakup letter is, what exactly are you breaking up with?
Exactly.
So I'm not just breaking up with you, the academy. I'm breaking up with overwork in the academy. I'm breaking up with hyper-competitiveness in the academy. I'm breaking up with isolation, the tendency to isolate in the academy.
I'm breaking up with these things. Mm-hmm. I'm breaking up with this part of this relationship with mm-hmm. you. So I guess what I would say is that there isn't a person in the academy, I don't think, who couldn't benefit from writing this letter,
mm-hmm.
who could start to make a list of grievances so they could go down your blame game road, and start to make a list of grievances, start to make a list of the things you don't like. And so remember the episode where we had you sort of walk through and find all the things that you don't like. Well, you have your list of don't likes. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to break up with those? Is there a way to keep doing what you're doing and break up with those? Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. And then there are the people who the door's closed. I mean, there's so few jobs there. I was talking to somebody today who served on a search committee at a UC school this last week, and they had 385 applicants for a single mm-hmm. position. Mm-hmm. It's just because it's one of the very few mm-hmm. happening in the field
right.
in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so just an aside, the odds for you at 385-1, it isn't about you.
Right.
So let's say you're going to break up with the whole thing. It's just, I think that is such a valuable tool.
Yeah.
To just say, okay.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah. So you have people in your Art of Leaving program do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have them just go through and say this and this and come at it. Go ahead and come at it from righteous, hysterical, mm-hmm. whatever. So if you write your breakup letter, you get a lot closer to your pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So let's go back to Illinois. What would one of your things be that you broke up with?
Well, it was reminding me of the conversation we had in the kitchen when I was trying to figure out what to do, because I didn't have really a job. I was selling jewelry on Etsy. And
right.
and then you were like, well, Karen, as long as I've known you, you've been motivated by rage. So what are you angry about? And I said, what am I angry about? What am I fucking angry about? I'm fucking angry at fucking graduate programs that fucking bring in all these grad students like lambs to the slaughter, and with knowing full well they'll never get a job, but lying about it the entire time. And that was the origin of the professor is in.
Right. So you got close to your emotion. About,
yeah, that
about.
Was like a breakup. I mean, that it was hypocrisy and self, the self-dealing, the self-servingness of tenured faculty who are completely secure and have been for years, and their prestige, hinges on bringing in PhD students, and they won't even consider that. And then, won't even consider, well, nowadays they do, but back then they absolutely did not consider reducing or stopping graduate admissions.
Right.
And then releasing the PhDs when they're finished and like, oh, well,
Good luck. Right.
So anyway.
Right.
The hypocrisy, I'd be like, you're self-serving, you're hypocritical, you are elitist, sexist and racist, of course, and homophobic, but you're abusive, you are repressive, in terms of just the way that anything that is contrary to like this kind of elitist gentleman's agreement of how tenured faculty speak to each other. That if you sort of deviate from that, how you are shamed, you're shaming.
Right.
I guess with all the wisdom of the 10 years of running the professors in, the 10 years of being fully out of the academy. And we talk about this all the time on the podcast, and I do in other stuff as well, but it's the shaming.
Right.
And the shame foundation. So it's both shame as a thing that exists as a noun, and it's shaming as the verb that the people who are in the academy shame others right. to try to prevent them from leaving and prevent them from challenging it.
Yeah.
And that's what I would call out.
Right. So that'd be the thing. Like, I'm not going to stay in an environment of shame.
I'm not going to. And then, and that one's really close. That one's pretty easy in a way to touch to, well, it is now. It wasn't then. But because it's like, I'm not going to be shamed by you anymore. Mm-hmm. I refuse to be shamed by you anymore. It was very clarifying to start the professors in and run it all these years, because they come at me trying to shame me all the time, especially in the beginning and even now, so mm-hmm. to an extent.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, look at you. There you go again.
Right. Using the academic shame mm-hmm. tool. And I have a giant shield. I'm immune to it now.
Yeah, but I'm immune
you're
to
not
it.
Immune to it when you're in the middle of
no.
it. It's really hard. Mm. So when you write this letter, you're going to get closer to your feelings. And once you're all in your feelings, you're going to be all in your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a whole bunch of stuff that comes up. And so this is not a, just like any breakup, it's not a like, here's my letter to you, and now tomorrow I'm going on to a new thing and I'm out of this relationship.
Right.
There's a lot to process.
Right.
And I had this, I didn't talk to you about this before, so you can be like, oh, good God, here we go again. But I have this book that I think I may have mentioned in a previous podcast, but I think it's really valuable, so I'm going to mention it again, because who goes back and listens to old things unless you wrote it all down and then great. But it's a book called Despair and Personal Power in the Nuclear Age.
Yeah, Joanna Macy.
Right, and yep. it's totally like this late 1970s, early 1980s cover and book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really about people working on nuclear power, the threat of nuclear power, and mm-hmm. and the whole theoretical argument is, until you face your despair and tie it to the collective, we will not make change.
Yeah.
Right? So they yeah. have these guidelines for despair and empowerment work that mm-hmm. I think are a great follow-up mm-hmm. to the grief letter.
Which, by the way, can I just say the reason that we have that book is because I had a reading group that started reading Joanna Macy's new book,
uh-huh.
which I forgot the title of. But
is that the Hope book?
Yeah, it's about hope in the face of environmental devastation.
Yes.
She's been doing this work, well, since the 70s.
Right.
Anyway, I ordered the wrong book, and that's, right. that's
this
why
is the
we
book
have
that.
That.
Came.
Yeah, that
and
was
so,
the first book.
And this
came.
Was like lying on the, in classic our house, there's like lying on some table.
And
it's
the
like,
rabbits are probably
why
eating
do we
it?
Have a 1970s nuclear power book in our house? And so it ended up being this really amazing book, because I just flipped open to the theoretical foundation, or maybe I looked at the theoretical foundation. I don't know, but I came up with these guidelines for despair and empowerment work. And at the time, whatever thing I was working on with unstuck clients, this mm-hmm. really resonated with me. Mm-hmm. And I've in small group coaching, I've brought this up over and over and over again. I guess I want to give them to you as a way out of your individual despair,
mm-hmm.
right? You write your breakup letter, you write all the pain that you went through. At some point in that process, especially in abusive and codependent relationships, you find other people mm-hmm. who've experienced it,
mm-hmm.
right? And everybody in the academy has experienced it in some way, whether right. acknowledging it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So the first step in these five guidelines is acknowledge our pain for the world. If it's present, we cannot deny its reality. We cannot make it go away by arguing it out of existence or burying it inside of ourselves. So that's the breakup letter, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first, like, I'm going to acknowledge what's going on here. I'm going to acknowledge. Now, this is, says our pain for the world, but mm-hmm. you could just as easily, you know, I'm acknowledging my pain within the academy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm acknowledging that my pain for this whole experience,
mm-hmm.
that I just am going to acknowledge it. This
yeah.
freaking hurt.
Right.
Including, it hurts so much that there's no job for me
mm-hmm.
and I have to go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so sad.
Right.
But if we don't acknowledge that, if we don't acknowledge that reality, well, if we deny its existence, that doesn't make it go away.
Right.
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 Right?
But it does keep us locked in a battle that
right.
will never end. And a bitterness that will be corrosive
right.
over time.
Absolutely. And they recommend journaling and writing. And,
uh-huh.
and so this is why I think of it as like the breakup letter.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is where you write it out. Then, and this is hard when you come out of the culty system, validate our pain for the world, or validate our pain in leaving. Let us honor it in ourselves and others by listening carefully, accepting it as healthy and normal in the present situation.
Mm-hmm.
It is healthy and normal that you are grieving, mm-hmm. that you are angry, that you are have regrets, that you that you're rethinking every choice you've ever made.
Right.
That's normal.
Yeah.
Healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Keep working through it.
Right. And that's what the that's what so much of the post-academic advising does. And what's so aggravating about departments and disciplines that say, well, you can here's how you can pivot with your PhD and move on to non-academic work. And they're not wrong,
right?
But they're skipping over the loss and the grief.
Right. And they're not validating the grief.
You're right.
That's what I mean by the culty thing. They're not going to validate your grief. They're going to look away really hard because they don't want to deal with
right.
how this is happening. We
right.
we dealt with that where people were just like, oh, I can't look. I literally cannot look at you. Because you've left.
Well, they have learned a lot of other things yes. as well about our life.
I can look at you because what the fuck are you people doing? God, anyway.
This is just, I'm so embarrassed for you right now.
Yeah, look away, look away. So the next, the third one is experience the pain,
mm-hmm.
right? Let us not fear its impact on ourselves and others. We will not shatter, for we are not objects that can break.
Mm, wow.
And if you trust your resilience, and I think that this is a really hard one because I think one of the insidious parts of the academy is it pulls away your sense of individual power mm-hmm. and it ties you so much to somebody else's approval
mm-hmm.
that for it can sure. feel like without that, I will break.
Yeah.
Without this, I will crumble.
Right.
That reminder, to quote Glennon Doyle, we can do hard things.
Yeah.
Reminding yourself that you've done hard things because mm-hmm. most of you, if you've been in the PhD, didn't do it in your hometown.
Mm-hmm.
You moved. You navigated things. You moved to new places. You met new people. You navigated politics. You did all those things. So you have a resilience that you may have forgotten in the infantilizing
mm-hmm.
university thing.
Mm-hmm.
Move through the pain to its source.
Mm-hmm.
As we experience this pain, we learn that it's rooted in caring, not just for ourselves and our children, but for all of humanity. And this is about nuclear disaster, but I was just kind of blown away by the idea of what if we actually opened ourselves enough to go, this place is not a good place for me. And it's not a good place for a lot of the people that I see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, I'm going to make this not about me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost that Tong Len idea, you know, in Buddhism where you, if I have to feel this pain, may I feel it for the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's, there's a power in saying, this is not just me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the only one harmed by this system. I'm not the only one in pain here. So we can start to see it as a collective experience.
Right.
So that's where they think that the empowerment comes from, is mm-hmm. this, the theory here is you acknowledge it, you deal with it, you begin to tie it to a larger concern than your own.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last step is experience the power of the interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. That when you, I mean, I think it's in a way kind of what Quitlet does,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
It opens, I'm not saying it does it well,
right.
I'm not saying it's not narrow, but it does say, it does resonate for people because there's a whole bunch of people who've experienced it.
Right, yeah.
So if we can shift that, if we can keep processing it so it doesn't just get stuck in looping bitterness, I think mm-hmm. that's an interesting process.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
those are the five guidelines.
That's really valuable. Those are good guidelines for working your way through the grief and the loss of leaving the academy or leaving your toxic relationship to it, but in particular, leaving it.
Right.
Because that's, I think, so much of the loss is for people, you know, if you're only going to have, you know, a single digit percent chance of getting a tenure track job, people, there's just this massive gaslighting mismatch between the programs and the cultures of our programs that still lead you to believe that that is the normative result mm-hmm. when 97-95% of the people getting their PhDs are not going to have that result.
Right.
So it's lonely. It's lonely because you're in a sea of gaslighting.
Right.
So I think that those five steps are really good for figuring out how to kind of navigate through that.
Well, and also a way of figuring out how to connect yourself to all, that it's not just you.
That it's 97% of PhDs. Right. I mean, if you could connect, if you could really emotionally, at a gut level, connect to the universe, almost universality of this experience.
To the systemic problem.
Systemic problem,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So when we can take our huddled in a corner, isolated fear, mm-hmm. and we connect it to a larger experience going on and a group of people experiencing mm-hmm. it. And then, because I think that what happens is that leaving and or not being able to pursue the dream that you had gets individualized and becomes your failure.
And becomes shame. Right. I mean, shame thrives in secrecy and silence.
And silence, right.
And so really this is the opposite of shame. Sharing is the opposite of shame.
And so if you decide to leave the academy or you decide to change your relationship with it and you say, you know, and you, let's say you leave, and Karen's a great example, right? You leave, you know, don't do anything for a while. Then you get a jewelry business going. Then you do, you know, I feel like there was something else in there. And then
McNair advisor.
So it would be really easy to start in your head. What are people thinking of me? What's this? What's that? And then if you just respond, yeah, I'm getting out of a toxic relationship. So I'm just trying to figure out what I'm doing. It's going to be a little bit bumpy for a while. Like if you just said the world, they're like, wait a minute, you just got a job at here and now you're going to go work there. Now you're going to like, yeah, because I'm trying to figure it out.
But you know what's funny too is that the jewelry business started while I was still department head. And there was a lot of shame and shaming around it. And I felt really weird and awkward about it. But the thing was, is just like when you're in a relationship and say you start taking martial arts lessons and, or I don't know, whatever, and you're in this abusive relationship, but little by little, because of this thing you're doing on the side, you begin to feel empowered. You begin to connect with yourself in a new way and realize, wow, I have all these capabilities. I'm actually a strong person. And then on the basis of having, you know, learned some martial arts, you suddenly see your whole life a new way. And you're like, I'm getting out of this abusive relationship. Jewelry making was like that for me.
Right.
It was like this way of soothing myself and releasing my brain and getting out of destructive, repetitive cycles of self-blame and rage and everything that were incapacitating me. And it opened a door to think a new way.
Right.
So that I didn't end up sticking with that business, but it was the door opener.
Well, and also I would say that, and we'll talk about this next in the next episode about looking at your skills and your joys, is that it also gave you a reminder that you had a relationship to Japan separate from the study
That's
of Japan.
That's true, too.
That it gave you the opportunity to say, one of the things I love about Japan is the paper.
Right.
I love the paper. Uh-huh. I love the traditions.
And the aesthetics overall.
Right. So you could reclaim something that had gotten eaten up in the
misery of a publisher perish.
Right. So I just think there's a whole bunch in there.
Yeah, there is a lot in there, but we've talked for quite a while.
Yeah,
so.
It's time to wrap up. When you listen to this and you think, but wait, I didn't get to hear the questions. Next time you can come and join.
Right.
On Mighty Network to the event, and then you can hear the answers to the question. So thanks for joining us. See you next week.
Bye.